Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the 1973 podcast. Cannot wait to talk to this gentleman, two-time Stanley Cup champion from Philadelphia Flyers, Joe Watson. Mr. Watson, thank you for showing up. Thank you for coming on the podcast. We really, really, from the bottom of our hearts, appreciate it. Lifetime hockey fans, might not all be Flyers fans like me, but lifetime fans, and cannot wait to chirp with you, talk stories, talk about your career, and even your book, published author of the book Thundermouth.
Yeah.
Joe Watson.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for thinking of me, and thanks for inviting me in. I look forward to this interview. I've done a lot of interviews, and but this is really nice. When I do interviews, normally I'm talking to people that are not Flyer fans, but they want to do an interview and so on and so forth. But I'm certainly glad you're a Flyer fan. That's wonderful.
So let's start by going all the way back to British Columbia and tell us how, as a young guy, the journey from into hockey and how you got started and all the way up to maybe when you got drafted by the Bruins. So how did it all start? Even if you want to mention your brother, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I grew up in a place called in northern British Columbia, about 150 miles south of Alaska, in a place called Smithers, British Columbia. And I was a real outdoorsman. I loved hunting and fishing, so that was an ideal area for myself. And of course, when I was 3 and a half, my uncle Wilf said, "Joey, let's go out and try to learn skating." So he bought a chair out in the ice with me. There was a natural ice at the time. We only had 600 people that lived in the community area, so. And he bought this chair out there, and every time I thought I'd push off the chair, and when I thought I was going to fall, he'd have the chair in front of me so I could grab onto it to break the fall. And I just progressed from there. And it's funny how somebody can make such an impact in your life. When I was between seven and eight, I grabbed the puck and went through this whole team and went down and scored. And Claude Munson was our local druggist in Smithers of 600 people. The only druggist we had there. And he said, "Joey, you keep on playing like that, you'll play in the National Hockey League one of these years." So go to the show. That happened 70 some years ago. I've never forgot that. And I do a lot of speaking, and I tell that story. You never know when somebody's going to make some impact in your life. And I remember that very vividly. You come from a town of 600 people. There's not a lot of people that, there's some people play hockey, but a lot of them did skiing and did curling and everything else. But I was a hockey player. And I remember we were 16 years old. We went down. We represented the northern regions of British Columbia to go down this tournament in Prince George, BC. They had a team from north, east, west, south. So the team from Kamloops were the southern part, Vancouver, and then we had Victoria, and or Prince George. I'm sorry, it was Prince George. So there's only four teams in the tournament. And we did well in the tournament. We got beat in the finals. And after the game, this was 1961. After the game, there was a guy that came down and knocked on the door and introduced himself, said he is a scout for the Boston Bruins. And he told the coach, he says, I really like your team and I like some of your players in your team. And I'd love to invite them to a training camp at Estevan, Saskatchewan. So one of the guys was myself. So that was very exciting for myself. I got a letter on June 17th, I think it was, inviting me to Estevan, Saskatchewan, 1961, to try out for the Estevan Bruins, where they're a farm team of the Boston Bruins. And I get there, and I get introduced to the coach, the general manager, and they mentioned that we only have four positions available to make our hockey team. So I go to the scout that invited me. I said, why the heck did you invite me something like this? There's all these guys. There's 104 guys trying out for four positions on the team. I said, this is crazy. So he said to me, he said, Joey, he pointed his finger at me. If I didn't think you had a chance, I wouldn't have invited you. So that means that he believed in me. So I said, okay. So I said to myself, well, I only got 4 days to prove myself. So I go out there and start playing. And I get in three or four fisticuffs. So I thought that'd be a way for them to introduce myself to them and feel, okay, this guy is willing to do whatever it takes to win. And after 5 days, there's 100 guys gone and I'm still there. So I make the team and they called me in to sign me to a contract. And I says, you really want to pay me to play hockey? They said, yes. So they offered me $150 a month. And I had to pay $120 for room and board, and I had $30 to spend, and I thought, I'm living high off the hog, man. This is a good living. And that's how it started. And then I played there for a few years, and then I turned pro at 19 years old with the Boston Bruins. I went to Minneapolis. They were a farm team of the Boston Bruins at the time. And I went there, and I made the team, and I remember they called me in and signed me to a contract. They offered me $3,000 a year. And room and board so I was clearing maybe $150 every 2 weeks, which is I thought that was wonderful. That's better than working in a lumber mill, I said. So I worked there, I played there for a couple of years, and I had a lot of success, and I met Harry Sinden, was our playing coach, and yeah, him and I played defense, and he taught me a lot about the game. And while I was there, I got called up to play in Boston for the Bruins in Detroit in 1965. And we played the Detroit Red Wings. And they were my favorite team. And Red Kelly was my favorite player in the National Hockey League. And anyway, so we played the game. And Detroit was a number one in the league at the time. And we were number five or six out of six teams. And so obviously we were not a real good team, but we weren't that bad. And so anyway, we go into Detroit, and we beat Detroit 5-2 or 5-3. And I remember very distinctly coming out of the dressing room after the game, and a guy comes over, introduced himself. It was Gary Bergman. He was a defenseman for the Red Wings. And he introduced himself, and he said, you know, Joe, I watched you play. You did a great game tonight. I says, really? He says, yeah, you played well for a young guy and a rookie and everything else. And it's funny, you know, that stuck with me to this day. So that was very nice of him. And then of course, I made the Bruins in 1966, and Bobby Orr and I lived together at a place called Nittalahunt outside of Boston. And that's when Albert DeSalvo, if you remember, you probably don't remember, but he was the Boston Strangler, whatever he was, and he was killing all these women. And we had a big house. We had a 5-bedroom home in Nittalahunt, and whenever we used to leave, we'd have the women and the kids would come over, and we had security guard at the house that we had until they got him. Of course, they arrested him and so on and so forth. But that's the way our first year went, and I thought I had a good year. And then the expansion draft comes along in 1967, and you're only allowed to protect 10 players out of the whole organization. And I wasn't one of the 10 protected by Boston, so they made me available, and the Flyers drafted me, and And I went on from there, and we had some success, especially we had some success when we drafted a guy named Bobby Clark. And Bobby Clark was a diabetic, as we probably all know, and he took insulin every day, but he was a born leader. And he played, he was maybe 175 pounds, but he played like he was 210 pounds. He was a strong individual, very intense, and a very good leader. And, you know, the old saying, as Clark goes, the Flyers go, and that applies to when Orr was in Boston. As Orr goes, the Bruins go. So anyway, you know, we hemmed and hawed for a few years, but we made the playoffs. We missed it a couple of years, but then in 1973, we played Montreal in the playoffs, and they beat us in five games. And we had a guy named Dougie Favelle as our goalie. We had traded Bernie about 3 years earlier. And we played against Montreal. We played them tough. We won the first game of Montreal, and I thought we should have won the second one, but we didn't. And I remember Larry Robinson scored from center ice and Doug Favelle, and it goes in the net. And then the series tied 1-1, and they beat us the next three games, but the games were so close. And I think the Flyers realized we had to get another goalie, so they made a trade to bring back Bernie. And they bring Bernie back, and they hired Jock Plante. Jock Plante was a goalie for the Montreal Canadiens, and he's a very angle goalie and everything else. And he taught Bernie the angles, and he'd bring these ropes out the ice for a goalie not to be in position for positional play. And Bernie wasn't allowed to go to those ropes, and that's where Bernie let it. He learned his angles very well, and I really think that Jock Plante had a lot to do with that. And then we go on and we beat Boston in 1974, and I don't think we had any reason to beat them, but we did. Boston had played Chicago, I think, and they beat them in five games, and we played the Rangers in a seven-game series, and it was a very physical series, and we wore us out. We thought we wore ourselves out, and we only had one day in between starting the Bruins series after we beat the Rangers. And we go to Boston on a Monday afternoon, and we had to play Tuesday, and there's a big headlines on the Boston Globe. This is anticlimactic. We just beat a better team to get to the finals, and we're going to play for the finals of Stanley Cup. And I looked to see who made that statement. It was Freddie Sherwood, our coach. So I go to him. I said, "Freddie, what the hell are you talking about? We haven't beat them in 7 years in their building." He says, "I know, Joe. We're not going to show any respect. We're going right after them." And that's what we did. And it was Freddie's idea to shoot the puck in Orr's corner. The buildings are hot. Make him go back and get it. Every time he touches a puck, get in his way or hit him. Make him exert some energy. And, of course, it worked out well for us. And then the second year, we played Buffalo, and we were a cocky group. And we beat Buffalo in that series to win our second cup. And then the third cup in 76, we went against Montreal, and we didn't have Perron or McLeish. But I remember talking to Larry Robinson after they beat us in four straight, and they're all close game, one goal scores. And I remember talking to Larry Robinson after, and he said, "We were so happy McLeish didn't play against us, because Ricky McLeish used to always like Montreal, always seemed to get a goal or two." And so that was our run in the Stanley Cups, and then we lingered for a few years, and then I got traded and went to Colorado and so on and so forth. But I know I've talked a long time here with you guys. You probably want to ask me questions, but
no, it's great.
We can end it right there now, so keep going.
let's rewind a little bit, Joe. So your time with the Bruins, I know it was short. Yep. And any fond memories about your time in Boston, especially living with Bobby Orr, that you got to have a good Bobby Orr story.
Well, yeah, I do have. He was the cook and I was the cleaner. Yeah. Oh my God. He would cook the food and I had to wash the dishes and vacuum and so on and so forth. So I didn't mind that. So that was a a good thing, I guess. You know, we try to keep the place as prim and proper as we possibly could, but sometimes it didn't look that way, but of course our house was a party house for the Bruins, because we were the only two single guys in the team. And So when we wanted to have a little party, our house was very prominent in as far as doing things such as that. Yeah.
In that expansion draft, the Flyers drafted pretty well in that expansion draft with the guys that they got. If you think about it, looking back on it.
We did. You know, we got Perron, we got Doug Favelle, now we got Ed Van Impe out of Chicago, and there was John Gauthier, he was from Montreal, and John Mizek, I think, was from Detroit. Pat Hannigan, we got Lou Gotti out of Chicago, Gary Dornhofer, a teammate of mine. We did draft well, and we played a good defensive style of play, and Keith Allen was our coach. And Keith was a guy, a very defensive-minded coach, and that worked well for us because of our style of play. Yeah.
And Lou Engotti had quite the reputation back then of being a little bit crazy.
Well, you know what? You know, he wasn't that big, but he's a tough little guy. He was. And I remember very distinctly of him and having a lot of parties at his house. Because I didn't live there. We lived in Pennsylvania. I lived in Pennsylvania. Most of our teammates lived in New Jersey. But I know Lou, Ed Van Impe, John Mizek. There's about six of us lived in the media area of Philadelphia, where I still live today in the area of Philadelphia. But we were, like I said, you know, we had some skill, but a lot of determination, hard work, and that propelled us into doing well our first year. And I remember we played St. Louis in the playoffs that year. In the first round, we lost in the seventh game, and we kind of got beat up pretty physically. And Mr. Snyder vowed this would never happen to a Flyer team again. So he told the coaches, the general manager, he was the owner, that I wanted players that could play as well as take care of the situation when things got out of hand on the ice. And of course they started making, you know, they drafted a guy like Bob Kelly, Dave Schultz, Don Selesky, and we already had Ed Van Impe, and we had Barry Ashby. So we had a pretty, and then we traded for Andre Dupont. So we had a pretty physical group of players, so it really boded well for the Flyers for a number of years, especially the Broad Street Bully images that we presented.
So shifting gears a little bit, recently Ed Van Impe passed away. And the thing I always remember about him is from the game against the Russians, the hit, and how memorable that was. And just quick thoughts on Ed.
Well, you know what, Eddie and I, we broke in together. He broke in with Chicago. I broke in with the Flyers, or with Boston. Then we got to know each other pretty well. And we go to training camp in Quebec City. And, you know, we haven't signed our contract, but we're in camp and everything else. And Eddie and I determined that we're going to sign together. If we don't get what we're getting, we're leaving. So in a way, Bud Poile, the general manager, calls us and says, listen, if you guys don't want what we're offering you, you're going to have to leave camp. We said, okay. And he told us, leave, go as far as you can. When you get your destination, call us. So I drove Eddie to Fort Erie, Ontario, where his wife was staying at the time. And I went to Toronto, flew to Toronto, went back to Kamloops, British Columbia, where my first wife was in nurses training. And I went there. So I phoned him when I got back to my destination, and he was so upset. How the hell could you go that far away? Well, you told us get out of camp and get as far away as you possibly could, and then phone me. So he was upset, and it took me another three weeks before we signed our contract. But it worked out very well. It really did. Yeah.
Tom, do you have a question for Joe?
Yeah. What do you think the biggest coaching difference in philosophy between Harry Sinden and Ray Sciarro?
Well, Harry was a very, very determined guy. I played with him in Oklahoma City when we won the Central Professional Hockey League championship that year. And Harry was kind enough. He got an offer by Boston to go up and be their Boston coach. So he brought me along with him, which was very nice. Freddie was a type of guy that was very quiet, And he would say things, you wonder what the hell he meant by it. But we were smart. We weren't smart enough to figure it out until a month later. We said, oh, that's what he means by that. He said, he'd always say, make sure you take the shortest possible route to the puck and arrive in ill humor. So we got that figured out, especially the Broad Street Bullies. But Harry was, they're both very technical. I thought Harry and Freddie. But Freddie was an interesting guy. He didn't say a lot. When he said something, it made a lot of sense and took us a while to figure it out. But Harry was right to the point, and Harry was a great, a very, very a wonderful coach and a wonderful person for mine, for me. And I still, I was up in Boston a couple of years ago. I saw Harry, and I think Harry's struggling right now. But Harry was a great, and both coaches, there wasn't much in between. They're just very smart individuals, and they understood the game, and they knew how to coach it. And they used a lot of reverse psychology. And it worked to a T.
Ed, question for Joe?
Sure. Joe, what was it like? And kind of take us through your emotions the first time you held the cup after winning. I mean, because the three of us will never experience what you experienced. And so just
yeah, kind of, you know what?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I don't drink champagne. I drank beer. So after the thing, after we won, it was in Philadelphia, we won nothing on a Sunday afternoon. And I told our trainer to go get Bobby Orr. So there was a room adjacent to between the two dressing rooms. And I took the cup in there, and he came in there, and I said, do you want a drink on the cup? He says, are you kidding me? I didn't win the cup. You guys won it. So he wouldn't drink out of it. But him and I, we had a good little session, and, you know, it was a good session. But to win the cup, it's icing on the cake. You know, you dream of winning something like that, but you never think it's going to happen. And I remember going to Boston, and Freddie Shiro saying a few things about how we're going to beat Boston. Not the way we're going to play them. This is how we're going to beat them. There's a big difference between playing and beating them. And he really believed that we could beat Boston. And I think some of us didn't really think we would, because we hadn't beaten Boston in 7 years in their building. So I remember the first game, they beat us 3-2, and Orr shot the puck off by skate with about 30-some seconds to go, and then that it goes, so they win the first one. And then the second game in Boston, we were down 2-1 with about 50 seconds to go, and Ricky McLeish throws a puck out to Andre Tupont, who's coming in offside defenseman, and he shot the puck in the net, and then Bobby Clark scored the winning goal in Boston in overtime. He banged the puck out of the air. I didn't know he was a baseball player, but he banged it out of the air. In the net it goes, and of course we win there, and then we go to Philadelphia, and we were gung-ho. And I don't think Boston took us that seriously, because we had a day off, you know, not showing up the rink, or not, you don't have to come. Well, we would all show up and go out on the ice and do whatever, where Boston had these days off, and maybe seven or eight of their guys would come out and go on the ice and everything else. So we knew that they weren't that serious about it. They just thought they'd win it. I think they went to the racetrack over in the Cherry Hill racetrack. I guess they enjoyed themselves over there, but we were very serious about the whole thing. And our attitude was different than Boston's. I honestly didn't think we would beat Boston. But when Freddie says, this is the way we're going to beat them, not play them, then I knew that Freddie figured that we had a chance.
Joe, that Broad Street Bullies team, you're part of that whole identity. Just tell, especially me, what that group of guys was like when they were all together. Like, was it something out of like Slapshot, or, you know?
Oh my God. Well, you know what? Sometimes you're right. Even on the ice, it was like Slapshot sometimes. Holy God. And in fact, I think they made that movie about our team. They had to have, because a lot of the things that happened in Slapshot happened with our team. Oh boy. But we had interesting characters. Holy God, man. It was a fun time. In fact, we went to Russia. I want to take you back to 1976. when the Russians were over here beating all the top teams in league, and it came down to a one game series. We had to beat the Soviets to uphold the prestige of hockey in North America. And I remember Clarence Campbell, who didn't like the Broad Street Bullies. He hated us because we were bad for the game. Only the thing is, we had a great image, and I think it intimidated the Russians. And the Russians beat the Bruins. They beat the Rangers. They tied Montreal. And I thought we were the best team in the league that year. And I think we could have won our third cup if we hadn't lost a couple of key players, like referring to McLeish and Perron. But I think back to those days where the things that we did on the ice as well as off the ice were out of control sometime. But you know what? We were cocky and we were good, especially our second year. But I remember the Russian game when I scored the shorthanded goal against them in 76. And I never got beyond center ice most of the time. And I noticed the Russians are on a power play and they're making a line change, and they were taking their time making this line change. So I ambled up the ice with Selesky and Kinnerchuk, and Kinnerchuk makes a pass to Selesky, and Selesky shoots the puck low, and so Tretiak can't control it, and shoots it low and hits his pad and bounces out. And I was about 15 feet in front of the net. I don't know what I was doing there, but I was up there, and I happened to shoot the puck, slap the puck between his legs, and in the net it goes. And I proved one thing, boys: white man can't jump. I tried to jump, and probably jumped about 3 inches off the ice, and that was it. So Freddie Sherrill said after the game, he said, "Joe, you're going to set the Russian program back 20 years for Christ's sake by short-handed goal." But we went to Russia about 7-8 years ago. I took our alumni team over there to play. We went to Kazakhstan, Kazan, St. Petersburg, and Red Square in Moscow. And we thought Putin was going to play. Putin was supposed to play in Red Square, but he didn't anyway. But anyway, I was the only player that played in that game in 76. I went to Russia, and they had one guy that was alive, one or two guys are alive. The rest of the guys were all gone from that team. I couldn't believe it, because the way the Russians live, they live a tough life. They drink a lot of vodka and beer, and they don't last that long. But I remember Tretiak was there, but he didn't play. But wherever we went, we saw people with Flyer jerseys on in Russia, of all places. And I couldn't tell Mr. Snyder that because, gosh, he had just passed away about 6 months prior to our trip over there. But he would have been so happy, because he didn't like the Russians, but he would have been happy that we saw a lot of people with Flyer jerseys in Russia. And wherever we went, we sold the buildings out. They were so happy for the Broad Street Bullies to be over there, or some of them. I was the only bully over there at the time, but they treated us royally too. The Russians treated us royally. They really did.
Joe, when you guys went for that three-peat against Montreal, that team was a juggernaut, that Canadiens team.
What a team.
No Bernie, though. Bernie was injured.
Yeah. We had Wayne Stevenson. He did a great job for us, you know, but every game we lost by one goal. I remember, oh God almighty. I remember we went up ahead. I think we went ahead 2-0 in the first 10 or 12 minutes of the game. And then we lost 4-3, and Guy Lapointe scored from the hash marks right against the boards. And Wayne Stevenson, our goalie, I was right on the ice and I saw the shot come. I said, oh, he's got that. Well, he didn't get it. And it went in the far side, and then they won that one. And then Guy Lafleur scored for the blue line. They beat us 2-1 the second game of Montreal. And he scored from the blue line. Wayne missed it. Stevenson missed it. And then we come back to Philadelphia, and gosh darn it, we're leading 2-1 going in the third period. And they got a power play or something on it. They got a couple goals and they beat us 3-2. And then the fourth game in Philadelphia, they beat us 5-3. They got an open net goal. But I honestly feel, if we had both of those players, especially McLeish, because we held Montreal, they didn't get that many shots, but they got some goals on us. But McLeish was a very important guy to our organization, and he hadn't played since February. He hurt himself, and he hadn't played since February. He tore his knee all up, and Bernie hadn't played. Bernie got hurt in our first game in the warm-up that year in the playoffs. And he never recovered from that. So we were missing two very integral players that were important to our team.
I think the iconic Bernie Perrant Ken Dryden duel would have been stuff that is legendary.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. Yeah, we missed him, but you know, unfortunate injuries are all part of sports, and especially in hockey. Holy mackerel, it's important. But Wayne Stevens did a good job. He did. He did a good job for us. It's just that we didn't score enough goals.
Speaking of goals,
to beat him.
Scoring goals, Reggie Leach was on fire. He still holds the record.
Yeah, you're right. He got 19 goals, I think, that year. And he won didn't he win the most valuable player in the league?
He did. Yes, in a losing effort.
He got 19 goals.
Yeah.
I remember Scotty Bowman saying, oh, we're going to put a guy in Leach. We'll see what he does. Well, I remember he scored 19 seconds into the first period of Montreal. Reggie scored right over Dryden, short side high, right over his shoulder. Holy God.
Yeah. He's a character, too. He is a character.
Yeah, he is. You're right.
Tom, do you have a question?
He was a great guy.
Yeah. When you played your first game in the NHL, was there anything about the game that surprised you?
Well, the players, I think the players were bigger, but they were faster. They were faster, you know, and we're in the minors where I was playing in Oklahoma City, you had time to make a play. Whereas in the national hockey, you didn't have as much time as you thought you would have. And so you had to get the puck out of your zone as quickly as possible and hopefully go on the offense, go down there and try to score in the opposition. But that's the one thing I noticed more than anything else was the guys were bigger and they moved quicker. But I remember distinctly playing against Gordie Howe. And there was only, when I broke in the league in 1966, there was only four rookies that broke in the league that year. There was Orr, myself, Ed Van Imp, and Brian Conacher. And I remember a game in Boston against Detroit, the first game that year, and Gordy got me in the nose, and he broke my goddamn nose. Jesus God, I was so upset. And he said to me, he says, welcome to the league, Rook. What a way to welcome me to the league. Broke my bloody nose. But anyway, I got even with him in 1972. I broke three of his ribs, so I got even with him.
You had enough backup then, right?
Yeah, well, you know what happened? When we were fighting position in front of the net, and I saw the puck come to him, and I see it was coming, so I grabbed him, and I kind of threw him down. Well, I fell down first, and he fell right on my skate, and cracked three of his ribs. And so I'm laying on the ice and he's laying on top of me. He says, oh, don't move. And I says, oh, don't worry. I can't. You're laying on me. So we used to converse back and forth when I used to see him later when Mark played for the Flyers and Gordy come in and I was doing some scouting at the time and selling advertising. So I got to know Gordy pretty good, which was nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Ed? Question for Joe.
Joe, I guess it's kind of a weird way to ask the question, but what was your perception of when the Russians came out on the ice? And, you know, obviously they had their mystique of how they won year after year and stuff like that. One thing, did you notice, like, were they just more crisp skating-wise or just there?
Well, that's a great question. You know what? We played Thursday night in Toronto, and we had a couple days off to prepare for the Russians. And they played in Montreal, I think Thursday or Friday, and they tied Montreal. And so Saturday morning, both teams were supposed to go practice. So the Russians go out in the ice and they're really going through their gyrations on the ice. And we're watching. I said, holy Christ, look at these guys, the way they skate and handle a puck and shoot. And I went to Freddie. I said, Freddie, I don't think we should even go out and practice. Let's just go out there and fool around. And the Russians are going to be watching, see what we're doing. They're trying to figure out what we're doing and everything else. So Freddie says, that's a good idea. So we didn't, we went out in the ice and fooled around. And then after the practice, we had a big press conference in the building and they introduced the Russians and they introduced the Flyer, but they introduced the Russians. They're getting light applauses and from the people. And there were a lot of press from all the world there, right? There was 300 press or something that, so in a way, they start introducing the Flyers and they come to number 8, Dave Schultz. All of a sudden the Russians are paying attention. They were looking around to see who this guy was. And And we picked up on that. They said, oh boy, these guys are nervous. So we knew they were nervous and everything else. So anyway, Freddie says, I know how we're going to beat them. And what I want, if Freddie divides a system, he wanted his defense to stand up at center ice and the forward slide in behind the defense and try to pick up the loose pucks to try to throw them off stride. And if we do, maybe we'll get the puck going the other way. We'll catch them off guard, and it worked to a T. We beat them 4-1, but we should have beat them 10-1. Trechak hadn't have played well. We outshot them 49-13, and we just dominated. And like I said, you know, it was a beautiful sight to see. But Clarence Campbell never liked us. He never liked us at all, and it's unfortunate. But we were great for hockey because wherever we went, we sold the buildings out. Nobody else could say that in the National League that they sold the buildings out. We were the only team that could really say that couple of years in a row, you know. We used to go to Oakland. God, they might have 5,000-6,000 people there. We go there, the building is sold out. And where it didn't matter where it was, we always sold all the buildings out. So it was a great mystique for us, the Broad Street Bullies. They really were. Holy God. But we had a good time on the ice as well as off the ice. We really do. Yeah.
Joe, yeah. I gotta ask you because you brought him up, and I was waiting to ask you your favorite. It could be on the ice or off the ice. Favorite Dave Schultz story.
Oh my God! Oh my God! The hammer. Well, you know what? I was one of the assistant captains on the team, and Schultz would get out there and be going crazy and everything else, and. And Freddie would watch him for a few minutes. Then he said, Joe, go get him. So I have to go out there and try to settle him down. I'm glad he didn't hit me sometime because, holy God. But the one I really felt bad was in the Ranger game in 74 when him and Dale Rolfe went at it. And we're on the ice, and he's just beating the heck out of Dale Rolfe. He's a big guy and just hammering him. And Rolfe was saying, get in here, help me. Get in here and help me. I need some help. And we wouldn't let their guy, that had a whole grad, Brad Park, and we wouldn't let the guys get in there to help. And Schulte kind of annihilated them. And the only time I ever saw Schulte lose was to Clark Gillies. Yeah, Clark Gillies hammered him pretty good there, right by our bench in the playoffs in 1975, I think it was, or 74 or 75. But Schulte never lost many. Man, he took on some big guys, and he would be losing a fight. He'd come through the left, the fight's over. I remember he fought Pierre Bouchard in 1974. I think he fought him 3 or 4 times in that series, and Schulte wouldn't be doing well. All of a sudden, he thinks, we'll do the left, the fight's over. The fight was over. And Schulte being a great, you know, great teammate and everything else, he's very quiet off the ice, but on the ice, oh my God, his actions. But, you know, probably the favorite one was when he beat poor Dale Rolfe up so bad, and Dale Rolfe was asking for help, and we wouldn't let the players get in there.
You know, but, I think if you're not a Flyers fan of that era, you think just yeah. Dave Schultz as the one guy on that team that was the policeman. But you guys had a ton of guys that could go. Bob Kelly could go.
Well, you know, we did. You're right. You take a look. We had DuPont. You know, we had Bob Kelly. You know, well, Selesky didn't do a lot of fighting, but. But guys like Ed Van Impe, Ed didn't do. He'd use a stick on the guys, and Barry Ashby, but we played well as a team, not as individuals. And that's when I look at this Florida team that the Panthers are right now. They remind me of our team because every time you move, somebody had hit them, and that's what they're doing. They just hit anybody that moves on the bloody ice. So I guess the thing to do is not move, so you won't get hit by Florida.
Right, and they play like a team.
They play, yeah, not as individuals. And you, when you look at Edmonton, they're not in the same class as them. I mean, I thought Edmonton would really do well. And I know the series is 3-2, but Florida, they're like a buzzsaw. They're like a buzzsaw. They're right on you. You lose control of the puck. And if you get by one guy, there's another guy right in your face. And that's the way we tried to play the same way. And I think they might have got that from us, that style of play, because they hit, they bang. Oh, my God almighty. And I know they're probably sore the next day because we were plenty sore when we played that way. And so I know they'd have to have bruises, but you know what? It's a Stanley Cup. You got to play hurt. I mean, we had guys hurt. A lot of us were hurt, but, you know, we wanted to win. And the ultimate goal is to win whatever you're doing, and that was our attitude.
Tom, question for Joe.
Yeah, who, in your opinion, who was the toughest opponent you ever faced on the ice?
Oh, boy. Toughest opponent. Well, good question. You know, John Ferguson from Montreal, he was a guy that I knew. I knew he was from British Columbia, and we did a couple of hockey camps ago up in my hometown in Smithers. So I got to know Fergie pretty well, but Fergie was a ferocious guy, man. He would go in there. There was a guy named Teddy Green from Boston, big Teddy Green, man. And man, he was tough. Orland Curtin back from the Rangers. He had the long arms and he could throw them. But there were so many guys, but I would say, and Gordie Howe too. Gordie Howe, I mean, my God, Gordie could be mean when he had to. And, but there were a number of guys, but if I was had to take one guy, it'd probably be Gordie Howe.
Ed, you got a question for Joe?
I'm going to say, you know, it's kind of my standard question, but what was your most favorite building to play in? You know,
favorite building?
Yes, sir.
Boston. You know why? Because it was small. And that means you had to get back in your zone and get back there and get the bloody puck out quick. If you're not, you're going to get crushed. So we try to get back there as quickly as possible and get her out, shoot her out or off the glass, off the board, but get it the hell out of your zone. And I enjoy playing in Boston. And of course, Montreal and Toronto, because it's hockey night in Canada. So your friends back in British Columbia had a chance to see you play. So that was good too. But Boston was a tough place to play. And when we beat them, I mean, holy God, it was hard to believe that. I could not believe we beat the big, bad Bruins. But they were a big, strong team, and we were too. And, you know, we prevailed, and that was it.
Joe, I got to ask you, just like my Dave Schultz question, I got to ask you, favorite Bernie Parent story?
Oh, God. Well, I'll tell you, Bernie was a hunter. He loved to hunt. So our first year in Philadelphia, he contacted me. He says, I want to come up and get a black bear. Now, he lives in Montreal. And we live in a place called Smithers, which is 150 miles from way up north. He said he wanted to get a bear. I said, oh. So he drove 7 days from Montreal to Smithers. Him and his buddy drove up there to come to get a black bear. So there was a friend of mine in the railroad. His name was Joe Tennant. And he was my coach as a young boy growing up, and he was an engineer. And he was so he used to have to take trains back and forth to a place called Vanderhoof, about 150 miles down the road. And so Bernie wanted to get a black bear, and Joe kind of was kind enough to let him come on the engine with him. The engine of all places. And so anyway, Bernie bought his rifle and they saw a black bear on the tracks. So Bernie's out there like the wild, wild west. He's shooting the bloody rifle, shooting at the poor bear. And he dinged the bear so many times. I think the bear died of fright more than anything else. And he hit him in the shaker so many times, bear didn't move anymore. So anyway, they stopped the train, got the bear and put it in one of the cars. And then they brought it back to Smithers. And Bernie was proud as a peacock. Him and my dad drove around 2 days in Smithers with the bear in the hood of the car. And there was blood all over the car. There was flies and mosquitoes, and the dogs were chasing him down Main Street and everything else. And so that's my favorite story about Bernie.
Probably one of many.
Yeah, one of many, but that was funny. Oh, my God. When we see each other sometime, we still talk about it.
You know what's funny?
Years ago. Huh?
Every time somebody like Andre was talking about Bernie, too, and everybody's got a funny Bernie Parent story. If we ever get him on the podcast, which I would love to, because I'm like a huge fan of Bernie, yeah. I would just let him roll with all these funny stories. So
yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of funny stories with Bernie. Holy God, man. Yeah, he was a character. Holy shoot. There's a lot of stories, personal stories I couldn't tell you about, it, obviously. I mean, I wish I could, but... So anyway, maybe, I don't know that, I don't know, but maybe if you cut this one, if it's taped, you can cut it out. I don't know. But anyway, so now there's a minute to go in the game in Philadelphia, the sixth game, and Art Scove's a referee. And I'm in the ice, Bernie, of course, in the net. And, and the puck's in our zone. And so Bernie hollers to me, Joe, come here. So I go over there and talk. Bernie, what the hell do you want? He says, I want Art to come over here. So Art Scove comes over and he says to Art, he says, Art, just think, if we win this game today, we're going to get laid a lot and it won't be at home, he said. Oh, my God, almighty. I said, holy, and Art Scove, he put his hand over his mouth to prevent him from not laughing. But that's what he said. But I think you better cut that one out, boys. That wouldn't be too good. Holy God, man.
Just yeah, like Slapshot. Really just like Slapshot.
Yeah. That's right.
Awesome.
Oh, boy.
Tom, yeah. You got a question for Joe?
Yeah. I don't know how I follow that one up, but yeah. What do you... Between when you played in the game, how the game's played today, how do you think the game has evolved in terms of speed?
Oh, boy. That's a great question, Tom. You know, they're so fast, so quick. They're so skilled. The things they do in the puck, you know, we probably going 15, 20 miles an hour when we were playing. These guys are going 30 miles an hour. And when you get a guy going 30 miles an hour and then you hit another guy going 30, you hit, that's a big collision. And man, oh, man, oh, man, they're so big and strong and physical. I know they don't use a lot of physical force sometimes on the ice, but these guys are so fast and they handle a puck so much better than our era. They're just so, and they shoot the puck hard. Holy mackerel. I'm glad I'm not a goalie or a defenseman getting hit with a puck sometime because the way they shoot it. But the game has changed so much and the equipment is so light. The skates were heavy. Our equipment was heavy. I mean, we had played 4 games in 5 nights. And on the road, you know, then that's kind of tough. You know, your equipment would be dry, but it wouldn't dry all the way. But now they have bags of equipment. You know, they have all this new equipment and they're so fast and so strong and so quick. But I mean, that's the big difference in our game compared to what it was when we played. The skill levels is incredible.
Ed, you're up. Question for Joe.
I do. So what kind of segueing what, you know, talking about the players nowadays, how did you guys train to get into shape to go to training camp? Because I know that when we talked to Andre, he talked about, you know, we went to training camp to get into shape, but did you do anything special? Because you played for quite a long time and you played a very physical game. So, you know, what did you do to prepare yourself?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. I started training on the 1st of January, 1st of July for training camp. And I know a couple of years, we had 3 years where we went to the middle of May. And so in a way, I had about five, six weeks to recover and then start training. And I used to train 5 days a week. Didn't do a lot of running. I did a lot of bike riding. And we had mountains in my area where I lived. And so I used to go climb the mountain, and then I'd come down the mountain and unfortunately, sometimes I fell down and cut my knee or my arm or my elbow or something like that sometimes. But I trained very hard because I wasn't as skilled as a lot of my teammates. So I had to overcompensate in other ways. And so my training was very hard. And we had training when we go to training camp. Like Andre said, you know, you go to training camp to get in shape, but I wanted to be in shape when I went to training camp. Some guys lived differently. They didn't come to camp real good shape, and sometimes they suffered. I saw some guys lose their jobs because of it, you know. So, I mean, that was my idea. My idea was to come to camp in real good shape. And of course, we had training camp for 5-6 weeks, where now they have 20 days, boom, they're out there in the ice playing, and the season starts. So it's totally different. And we had training camp up in Quebec City a lot, which was really nice. And then we had training camp in Portland, Maine, which is our farm team of our team, farm team. And then we trained in Philadelphia too, at University of Pennsylvania. But I always try to come to camp in shape. I didn't want to be like some of the guys, like some guys came in, man, oh man, they weren't in great shape. And they had to suffer. They suffered in training camp. They really did. But my idea was I wasn't as talented as some of the players, so I had to overcompensate and work hard to get myself in good shape to be ready to play.
Joe, a lot of the people that watch this that are Flyers fans or even Bruins fans don't realize that you spent the end of your career in Colorado. How did you end up in Colorado? And how about some memories of what?
That's a good question. At the end of the year, you have a meeting with the coach and the general manager about your season and everything else. And mine was 78. And I got called in, and you discuss your season, and they said, what we want to do is we want you to stay and maybe play 35 to 40 games. We want to start breaking in some young defensemen. And I said, oh boy, I'd rather play. And one said, well, if you want to play, we're going to have to trade you. So they traded me to Colorado. I go to Colorado there, and they named me the captain. And we had a young team, inexperienced team, but a lot of good young players. And it's very ironic. I played my first game in St. Louis in 1960, 60, 63 in the Central Professional Hockey League. I played my last game in the same building on November 11th, 78. I was back in the zone for a puck, and I stretched out to reach for the puck. And this one of the players pushed my lower back, and I exploded into the boards. I hit my right leg, and I broke my right leg in 13 places. End of my bloody career. Oh, my God, man. My bone was sticking right out. Bone was sticking out like that. Went right through the hockey sock. And there's a guy named John D'Amico, a linesman. He came to me, and he says, Joe, you okay? I says, I don't know. He says, oh, no, keep your head down. And I didn't know what he meant. Keep your head down. So then I looked at the people behind on the glass there behind the goal, and they were looking, and they turned their head. So I knew there was something bad happened, but I didn't know my bone had come through my hockey sock. So I had to go to, I was in St. Louis, and I was there, and oh God Almighty, what a way to end my career. And so I was in St. Louis for quite a while, and then just prior to training camp or prior to Christmas, they moved me to Philadelphia. So I was home for about 2 days, and then I went back in the hospital, and I had 9 operations on my right leg, and before it really rectified itself, and now I'm as good as new. I got a new kneecap. I got a 12-inch titanium rod in my thigh, and I'm full of titanium on the right side because when we were in Russia 7 years ago, I hit this guy in Moscow, and I hurt my shoulder. And I'm 75, 74, 75 at the time. I run this 30-year-old guy, and he hits me, and down I go, and dislocated my shoulder, and I had to come back to Philadelphia. Have a shoulder operation. Kind of stupidity of myself, but anyway, I just only knew how to play one way, and that's the way I played. And unfortunately, I got hurt a lot. Yeah,
Joe.
Love Colorado. What's that?
I was going to ask you about the transition from after Colorado to back into civilian life. We'll say.
Yeah, it was tough. And I remember Mr. Snyder coming out to Colorado to visit there in St. Louis when I broke my leg. And he said, Joe, we want you to work in the organization. And I said, oh, okay. So he says, we want you to do sell advertising and do some scouting for us. And I said, okay, I can do that. So I did scouting for 4 years. And then my family, I had a young family. My son was born in 76 and my daughter was born in 79. And I would travel for 10 days and I'd come back home. The kids didn't know who I was. I was doing a lot of scouting. So I said, I can't do this anymore. So the Flyers offered me a job in 1984. So I sold advertising for 35 years with the Flyers, the Wells Fargo Center, the Spectrum and that. And I did very well at it. So that was that. Yeah.
Tom, question for Joe.
Yeah. What are you most proud of from your hockey career?
I would say winning our first cup, secondly, beating the Russians, and thirdly, winning our second cup. Because in our second cup, we were a cocky bunch of individuals that we just knew we were going to win. And we did win, and so that made us, like I said, we were a cocky group on the ice as well as off the ice. But my biggest accomplishment, Robbie, and I played in some all-star teams and won the Central Professional League. I played for Oklahoma City. They were a farm team of the Bruins, and they moved the franchise from Minneapolis to Oklahoma City. And I made the first all-star team that year and everything else. So Some of those memories stick out in my mind.
Ed, do you have a question for Jill?
Sure. Who is your favorite roommate on the road?
Myself. Oh boy, oh boy. You know, I room with a lot of characters. I was one of the older guys, so I kind of room with myself a lot. But when my younger days, you know, I room, you know, you room with, you change roommates every 2 or 3 weeks, get to know everybody. So Ed Van Hipp, I would say he was my closest teammate on the Flyers until my brother came. So Ed and I, we lived in the same area together. And so he was my favorite roommate, I'd say. Yeah. Ed Van Hipp.
Joe, I got to ask you, if you were to sum up your entire career in one word, what would it be?
Oh, boy. What would it be? Oh, shoot. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. What would it be? Tenacity. I play with a lot of tenacity. I play with a lot of gumption. I try to play with a lot of gumption. And I just felt in order to be successful, you have to work hard. And I remember my dad telling me when I was a young boy growing up, he says, son, doesn't matter whether you're raising a family, running a business, going to school, or playing sports, you only get out of it what you put into it. And I was fortunate that I put a lot into it and I got a lot out of it. And so I would say I got a lot out of my life as an athlete. I really did. And I, you know, I'm 80, I'll be 82 here in a couple of weeks, and I work out very feverishly and try to keep myself in shape. And my dad passed on at 93 and my mother went at 88. So I'm hoping to live as long as they can, or as long as they did. So that's why I work out and keep myself in shape.
Well, we hope you live as long as you can, Joe. It's been great. We're not going to wrap it up just yet because I want these guys to ask you one or two more questions. Tom, final question for Joe. Make it a good one.
Sure. All right. What advice would you give to a young defenseman coming up today?
Oh boy, you got to learn your profession. You got to learn your profession and watch the best defenseman in the game, who you think are the best defensemen in the game, and try to emulate what they do on the ices. And if you have a teammate that's really a good defenseman, then you watch him, what he does on the ice as well as off the ice. So I think it's very important that you follow the game very closely and see what certain defensemen do in certain situations, and you try to copy whatever they're doing.
Ed, what's your last question for Joe?
Joe, tell us about your book and how the name came about. And
oh, great. You know what? So we go to Russia, eh? This goes back to the Russian trip. And we had a reporter come from Dallas with us. He was living in Dallas. He came on the trip with us. And so anyway, he was doing stories back to America, which I wasn't aware of. I had no idea. And he was doing all these stories, and then we're coming back, and him and I in the plane together in Moscow, fly back to New York, 12-hour flight. We're sitting with each other, and he's telling me these stories about our trip. I says, what? He says, yeah, I've been doing a lot of stories, and everybody is so interested in the stories that I'm sending back, and they're paying attention to it. And I said to myself, if I've ever decided to do a book, I'm going to hire him. And you know what? About 3 years later, I talked to my wife, and you know, because a lot of people told me I had so many good stories, I can remember a lot of good stories, that you should be telling this. And I said, oh yeah, okay. So one day I thought, oh geez, maybe I'll do that. So I contacted the guy in Dallas, and he was born here, but his wife and him lived in Dallas. And I told him I want to do a book. So we've had a lot of success with the book. We sold almost 6,000 books all over the world. And we had fans I never thought existed in Budapest, Hungary, or Hawaii, or Australia, or New Zealand. They're hockey fans over there, Flyer fans. And so I've had a lot of success with the book. And I must say that I only have 300 left, about less than 300 left. And that's all I'm doing. And once I sell those, that's it. I've had enough. Because I remember Bobby Orr telling me, he says, Joe, you're going to have to sell the book. The book's not going to sell itself. You have to go to a lot of events. And boy, he was right. So it's kind of wore me down, and I've had enough of it. But I've had a lot of, Amazon gave me a 4.94. I had a rating of 5 out of 5 in my book, 4.7. The lowest rating was 4.7, 4.6 on my rating of by Amazon. So I've done well with the book, and I'm glad I did it. And I've had a lot of people question me in the book and ask me questions, and I'm still selling it today here and there, but I don't, like I said, I only have about 300 left, and I'll be happy when it's finished.
Joe, I want to ask you, if somebody wants to reach out to you to get a book signed, is that possible, and how
it's JoeWatsonOfficial.com. Just okay. JoeWatsonOfficial.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, I got to ask you one more, and this is a story.
Yeah.
What is your all-time favorite hockey story that you either were involved with, saw, or somebody that you know that you were around? You got to leave us with a good one.
Oh, my God. All-time favorite story. Man, oh, man, oh, man. Well, the hunting trip with Bernie shooting that bear and driving around Smithers for 2 days, one of the great stories. The Russian game when the Russians walked off the ice and we never thought they were going to come back. And Mr. Snyder went down the dressing room and told them we're not getting their 200,000 rubles. And they came back and played. And of course, I was fortunate enough to score a goal in that game. And of course, being the last guy to touch the puck in our first Stanley Cup win, there was about 20 seconds ago, and Orr shot the puck down the ice and it missed the net, went behind the net. And I didn't touch the puck until there was force. I looked up at the clock and there was no Bruins near me. The first guy near me is Wayne Cashman. There was only 4 seconds to go. So I touched the puck and Terry Criss jumps off the bench and he makes a beeline. I gave the puck to the linesman thinking there's going to be a faceoff down there. Well, he jumped off the bench, went and grabbed the puck off of the linesman. And he still has the puck today. And I regret, I wish I had kept the puck. I would have had that puck because I was the last guy to touch it. But anyway, those are some of the stories, I guess. I could go on and on and on, but I think those are three good stories.
And the Bernie story is always great, too. The little extra one.
If you ever talk to Bernie, ask him about that bear hunting in Smithers.
We will. We definitely will. Like I said, I'd love to get him on, and I'd love to get all the alumni that I can on the show and just talk Flyers and talk hockey and talk comparison to the Slapshot movie, because it sounds a lot like it.
Yeah, I think Slapshot originated from the Flyers and the Broad Street Bullies.
I think so. So, well, Joe, we're going to wrap it up, and I'd like to say thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully maybe we can do it again sometime.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
Maybe we can get a bunch of guys on and we can talk shop and get it going.
Yep, sure. But,
from a lifetime Flyers fan.
Good.
Nothing but thanks and praise for coming on, and thanks to all the guys from the show and everybody that watched it. Now you're officially a friend of the show. We're going to have to say that.
Well, thanks for thinking of me, fellas. I really appreciate you inviting me, and never know, maybe we can do it again sometime.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
All right, boys. Good talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night,
thank you so much.
Yep.